In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up, that by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. So wonderful to have you with us tonight here on Transformation Talk Radio. So thrilled to have my special guest here tonight, filmmaker, author, transformational coach, and meditation expert, Tom Cronin, with me on the show. Welcome, Tom.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me along today.
So great to have you. Now, before we get started on the interview, I just want to remind people, number one, thank you so much for emails and messages. Just love getting your feedback on the show. So many opportunities for you to connect with us and let us know what you're wanting and how you're feeling the show's going. So again, contact us. You can contact me directly at stephaniejames.world. And through that, you can sign up for a free exploration call and get 20 minutes with me. You can see what events are coming and what speaking opportunities that you might be a part of or online events. You can order my book, The Spark Igniting Your Best Life, all there on stephaniejames.world. So we're actually talking to Tom Cronin from Australia tonight. And so I know it's actually like a different day there, right?
Yeah, we're ahead of the world. We're setting the pace. We're about 24 hours in front of everyone else. Except for New Zealand. They're about 1 hour in front of us.
I love that. Well, Tom, some exciting things are going on. I know when you and I had first met, your film, The Portal, was just being released in special theaters, and now it's available.
Yeah, we're out now, and it's we had a small release in digital cinema, in the cinemas, and now we've gone live across the globe online. So that's through our own website. So it's really nice after, gosh, a 9-year journey to finally release this project out and let people start to enjoy it and immerse themselves in it and to grow through it, hopefully.
Well, and for people that don't know what The Portal's about, tell listeners a little bit about the movie, about this amazing project, which I just feel blessed. I've seen the movie twice. And it absolutely impacted me, my heart. Yeah, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, kind of. It speaks to crisis and challenges. You know, it really, I think it's twofold. One is that it shows how crisis and challenge is part of our evolutionary cycle and process, and how meditation and mindfulness is a very powerful tool to help us evolve and up level from crisis and challenge. You know, we've particularly in our world now, we're facing some very difficult times. And we've also probably many of us gone through many experiences in life that influence and affect us. They have this sort of ripple effect that still play out in our day to day. And the film shows through six individual stories that have all had their own crisis and their own challenging childhoods and upbringings, how they no longer need to be shackled by that and affected by that. And there's a liberation that we can get through mindfulness and meditation that allows us to be a lot more present and a lot more, I guess, sovereign in our own state in this moment, rather than being hijacked by our past and by the current external circumstances that we're having to face at the moment.
Well, and I think that's a challenge for everyone. I mean, it's so ironic that you made this film almost a decade ago is when this journey started, and yet the applicability is so huge to what we're going through right now.
Yeah, you know, I used to kind of pull my hair out, and there were probably times when I might be seen in a corner rocking backwards and forwards with my head in my hands, wondering why am I stuck in this project? But, you know, there were times when this project was just stuck and it couldn't sort of progress forward. And I think the insight now looking back is that there are almost like bigger things playing out for us. And at the time, we can't quite see why, and we kind of get in this very confused state. However, with hindsight, we can look back and go, oh, that all makes sense now. And if we could possibly in some way fast forward out of our, you know, current state of our lives and go into the future, we'd be able to look back and go, yeah, it all makes sense, and have a lot more trust and faith in the process. But now looking back, we can see why those delays were there, because, you know, we're talking about a film around global crisis as well as individual crisis. And so to be bringing the film out now is just so applicable and so relevant.
You know, and that's, I think that's exactly true. I know that that's true in my own life and so many of the people's lives that, you know, I work with, and I know you do as well, where it is, if we're able to look back and trace these little dots of time or circumstances, like it all lines up to bring us exactly to this moment.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the biggest learnings I've had, and one that I share with my students, is that when we get to really trust the process, that this process is, it might not feel like it, but it is a loving kind process. The intelligence of this existence, this universe, is, this is going to sound so difficult to hear for some people. And I totally respect and appreciate that, because it's been difficult for me as well. But when we can really start to see through the matrix and see this unfolding, that the thing I like to share with my students and clients is that there's a loving kindness that's supporting and nourishing us. And as this sort of maternal, kind, caring, loving, kind intelligence, it's not always nice. And, you know, I know I'm a loving, kind parent. You know, I love my children so much and so unconditionally. And I convey loving kindness to them all the time. However, as a parent, I'm not always nice. There are some times when there needs to be some guidance and some discipline and some boundaries and some structure and some ramifications for certain things to provide insights and lessons for them. And so the universe is like that for me too, which is actually me anyway, because it's an extension of me. Whole very esoteric subject, that one. But this loving kindness that sometimes isn't very nice to me, and it can sometimes give me lessons that I might need that I couldn't see. It's like I had a blind spot that I couldn't quite see. And so it needs to somehow let me be alerted to this blind spot. And the only way it can really do that quite often is to give me a lesson that's kind of quite uncomfortable. And then it's like, oh, okay, I get it now. Okay, I'm getting that. So I think humanity is getting a big lesson at the moment about our ignorance and about our distraction disease that we're suffering from.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that it's so interesting, right? I remember at times, you know, asking the universe, can't I just get the lesson in a pleasant way?
Yeah.
You know, I promise I'll listen. And yet, as you were talking, Tom, what it made me think about is how like 95% of our thoughts are subconscious anyway. So it's like we have this subconscious that's running the show. And I think maybe sometimes that's exactly right. It needs to be something that's a life circumstance or something bigger that brings us into awareness. And so if we're in this, you know, global distraction, you know, we as humanity has been just distracted, as you're saying, it's like this is the big wake-up call. And it had to be something big enough that the whole globe at once, all of humanity is getting the lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. We get them on a micro level, on a macro level. It's fascinating how it plays out. I'm like you. I'm like, please, please, just can it be easier? Can I get the lesson without the whack? And yeah, it only gives us what we need, and it's always giving us what we need. And so it's an unfolding that just continues to unfold. And you know, we didn't come here to get more Bitcoin. We didn't come here to, you know, go to the movies, didn't come here to meet someone and fall in love. We actually came here to discover what we are and what our truth is and what underlies all of that and that divinity within us. So until we start to realize that, we'll just keep getting some difficult lessons, unfortunately.
You know, I am resonating so much with this conversation. I feel like it's so much a part of what's going on for me personally right now. And yesterday I was listening to, I'm doing a course with Michael Singer on surrender. And it really speaks to that, about how what creates misery in our life is when we want things to be anything other than they are in this moment. And so we start clinging.
Yeah, yeah. And clutching. It's interesting, you're about the third person that's mentioned the surrender experiment. It's a surrender experiment, it's called, isn't it?
I think it's...
He's got a book.
He's got a book. Yeah. And then there's the...
process or something.
Yeah.
And then there's a course. So yeah, you know, it's so beautiful. Michael's work is amazing. And it's exactly that. It's so hard for us to unclench everything that we're holding on to, our stories, our drama, our possessions, our relationships, but to be totally free. That you know, what it brings back to for me is when I'm going through this process of letting go and unclenching and letting go of the tightness of me holding on to things, that I visualize divinity, and the divine doesn't hold on to anything. It's just there in that beingness. And so for me to be more divinity is to be more surrendered and to let go more. And there's such a, it's a little bit of faith that needs to come with that for the ego, because you have to convince our ego, which is holding on, to let go, because divinity doesn't hold on anyway. So it's like, okay, I've got to talk to my ego now. So ego, you have to let go as well, right? And so there's this sort of a little bit of a discussion that needs to be had, and a little bit of faith that needs to come from that. But when we do let go, the peace and serenity that prevails, it's quite remarkable.
Well, and what I've found fascinating too, Tom, is that it can literally come to us in an instant when we really do surrender that ego and surrender, instead of saying like, I don't want it to be this way, it can't be this way. It's like we're pushing this huge stone up the hill, and it's such a struggle. And when we finally just say, yeah, you know what, there is divinity to this, there's divine timing. And when I'm in touch with that place, everything really is all right in the world. You know, and I can trust that life is going to show up for me exactly as it needs to at the exact right time. And I don't know the agenda.
Yeah, you know, coming from a control freak like myself, it's that letting go, you know, there's an irony in this, that the more we hold on, the more we try to control, the more we try to force the outcomes and make things happen, the energetic emission that we're sending out to the world is lack and need. And so there's this sort of paradox in this, that the more we hold on, the more we're repelling the thing that we're looking to attract, because it's the frequency that we're in. So once I let go, and the analogy I was given, which completely changed my life, it was so phenomenal, I'm happy to share it here, is this woman was doing my human design. I don't know if anyone's ever done their human design, and I was getting my human design done, and she was talking about my nature, my sort of who I am. And, you know, she was obviously reading that I'm a busy person that's trying to get lots done and try to achieve lots of things and trying to control lots of things. And she said, you know, you're like a busy bee trying to find the flower. What you need to be is the flower, and let the busy bees find you. And it was just like, wow, like just be open and radiant and glorious in the expression of my own divinity, and to be present in that existence, surrendering whether the bees come and find me or not, but not to be the one chasing, looking for things, but to just simply be in that glory of my flower-like nature. And then what started to happen, because there has to be this little sense of trust, to surrender. And then all of a sudden, bees started finding me. Like people would say, do you want to be in my podcast? Or, and you know, do you want to come and speak at our company? Or can we partner with you on something? And, you know, clients would start reaching out, potential clients. And so it was like, oh, hey, wow, this is really subtle, but it really, really works. And so that was a big shift for me, to let go of that frenetic chasing and to simply just be more and allow things to move towards me rather than me move towards them.
It's so beautiful. And I echo your journey in that. And I know you have shared that wisdom with me in the past. And I actually also just had a human design reading a week ago. Oh, wow. And so I'm a projector. I imagine, is that what you are?
I think I was like manifesting generator or something. I can't remember exactly.
Okay. Okay.
That was the biggest thing that I took away from it was about being the flower.
Well, and that was one of my takeaways though, because as my personality, it's like, you know, just wait for the invitation. And just like you were saying, like be in the flower, knowing that the bees will come to you. You don't have to go seek them out. Yeah. And it's not that you have to be passive either. Like, I think that's the important piece. You can be, like you said, in your total divinity and expression, and you can be, you know, creating and dreaming and having goals and having that trust and knowingness that it's coming to you.
Yeah. The big thing I always come back to is it's not what I do. It's what state I'm in while I do what I do. So I'm still, you know, I still get a lot done. You know, my days, a list of things to get through, you know, I've got the film coming out and coaching clients and running retreats, and workshops and corporate gigs. But what I have to pull myself up on and check in on is what state am I in while I do these things? Am I rushing hastily, trying to be perfect in a world that I can't achieve perfection in? Am I worrying about whether this is going to work out or not? Am I trying to control things? Or am I just in flow? And when I'm in flow and I'm still doing the things, I'm still in action, but it's what state I'm in while I'm doing the action that's critical.
Yeah, love that. So I think these are the important things I want to talk more with you when we come back from break. I think about these things because, you know, I'm so interested in how we do have, and this is for all of us, we have these programs for happiness. And like you were talking about earlier, it's like how the ego clings to those, you know, is like, this is like the measure of success, or this is what, you know, makes us happy. And it's all this external things. And how really, you know, and I think this kind of goes with the theme of the movie, how do we find that peace? How do we find that connection within? And that really this is an inside job.
Yeah, it's a deep code we have that my happiness is derived from outcomes and acquisitions. That's experiences and acquisitions. So that's what we're sort of naturally conditioned to go and do, is to have an outcome or have an acquisition that will provide me with fulfillment. But then it's unsustainable and it doesn't quite often meet our expectations. So that leads us to unhappiness. Whereas when we can self-refer and have an internal experience of connection and happiness, then we're free from the need of the external world and the acquisition or the experience to provide happiness. And so it's a recode that needs to start happening here.
So much more to talk about. I'm looking forward to our listening audience joining us on the second part of my amazing conversation with Tom Cronin, life coach, filmmaker, author, human extraordinaire. And we'll look forward to having you join us and finding more out about the portal. And we're going to be talking about Plan B. So stay tuned.
Tune into Hungry for Answers every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com with me, Robin Clare. I am a recovery coach, professional, and best-selling author, bringing you eye-opening conversations about addiction and groundbreaking tools for recovery. To learn about me and my offerings, visit Clarity.com. That's Claire, Clare-ITY.com.
Are you ready to experience full body system wellness? Tune in to the Empower Me Show with Pam Bright, a spiritual toolbox for your life. Embrace the fullness of who you are as a spiritual being, having a human experience. Pam Bright is a multidimensional healer, light language channel, energy intuitive, and spiritual transformation coach. Join her for a rich conversation about how to unlock all your spiritual gifts. Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio.
We'd love to hear from you on Transformation Talk Radio and live on Facebook. Call into the show, 1-800-930-2819.
Ascending with the Octurians with Vivian Chouvette. Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio every second and fourth Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are shifting from this third dimensional plane of reality to higher octaves of life. Let us reclaim our sovereignty as a united family of light and manifest the planetary ascension, our return to Prime Creator. For information on our services and to connect with Vivian, visit infinitehealingfromthestars.com.
Inspire. Create. Empower. Only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Laub, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit trishlaub.com. That's Trish Laub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James, and I'm here with Tom Cronin, transformational life coach, author, filmmaker, and creator of The Stillness Project. You know, we haven't mentioned that, Tom. Tell the listening audience a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was my early stages of doing the work that I'm doing now, teaching meditation. And one of the things that really inspired me was to and really bring meditation into the world in a big way, to mainstream it. And so rather than going out as Tom Cronin, I thought it was something bigger than me, which was a movement. And so the Stillness Project was really looking to create a movement to inspire 1 billion people to meditate daily. And when we plant that seed, you know, if you've got a vision or a mission or a goal, really look at a long way down the road as to what life would look like if you fulfill that goal. You know, that's the key thing with having these visions and missions, is that you want to explore what life is like having fulfilled that. So we sort of looked at what would be a great achievement or an experience for you to realize if you were to do this. And so we sort of looked at 1 billion people, you know, meditating and what that looks like on the planet. And from that, what happens is that you start to manifest things to fulfill that end goal. And so the film came about, and, you know, podcasts and corporate, you know, working with some of the top corporates, and it's just one of those things that slowly continues to unravel with that background sort of subtle intention that I'm looking to fulfill over time. It's not, I'm less, oh my gosh, I've got to do that. And someone said, you know, have you got a counter on your screen or some way of measuring that, you know, that sort of every time a new meditator comes on board, I said, oh, that's kind of me being attached to it and me being, I guess, egocentric about it. It's more, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's just something that I'm fascinated by and motivated by. And being on a podcast today with you is part of that happening now already. So it's hard to quantify, and I don't need to quantify it. There's nothing to satisfy my needs around it. It's just something that I feel inspired to do.
Well, it's like you were talking about, it's like when you're really clear about the outcome, it's like that frequency then that you're sending out is just gravitating these experiences and these opportunities to you. And so it's unfolding already, you know, like have to push it. You don't have to push that big stone up the hill. It's happening for you.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. You know, you can apply exactly what we were just talking about before the break, exactly what you just said then as well. That the less I seem attached to this, some days I'm just like, you know, I can't be bothered. You know, it's just like, and then the days where I'm just like, I can't be bothered. I actually just want to surf and do more yoga and read more books. And the next thing, a company will ring me up and say, can you teach our staff globally how to meditate? It's like, oh, that's weird. it's when I'm least attached to it, something will just throw me back in there and propel me into it. So it's fascinating. I just watch it with surrender a lot more these days, and more of a mild fascination as to how this is working out.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about the film a little bit more too, because that is one of the things in the film that's so powerful. And as you said, I mean, it's the challenges that all these people, all these individuals in the film are facing. And then through silence, you know, the silence becomes the portal.
Yeah. In actual fact, meditation is the portal and silence is what's on the other side of the portal. Mm-hmm. So we have noise and distraction, disturbance, and that's physiological, mental, emotional. And then we go through the portal of meditation. So that's the gateway through. And then on the other side of that is no noise. And so stillness is the absence of movement. It's the absence of motion. It's the absence of noise. And so stillness is always there, just like the blue sky is just blue sky. It's just a matter of, are there clouds there or not? So the weather isn't blue sky. The weather is the disturbance of the blue sky. Weather is rain or hail or sleet or snow or clouds and wind, but the sky is just blue sky. And so stillness is there. It's just a matter of, are we interested in exploring? And stillness is more than just stillness. It's not just emptiness. It's bliss. It's love. It's warmth. There's a interesting dynamic within that as well.
Well, and I love the analogy of the sky, because that's one of the things that helps me at times as an analogy in my own life, because I love that feeling when I'm flying, that it can be just whatever the weather is, cloudy and gray and awful. And then when you break through the clouds on the other side, it's just beautiful. And the sun is always shining up above the clouds. And so it's almost to me like the clouds and the storm, you know, that can become our minds, our experience, our circumstances.
Yeah, and it's not like we're running away. Sorry, go on.
No, excuse me. Yeah, and I was just going to say, we get to the other side and that's the bliss. That's the light.
And quite often we don't even feel worthy of having that experience. You know, we continue to self-sabotage or create drama and all sorts of noise in our life. And it's kind of like the eye of the storm. You know, it doesn't mean the storm isn't there. It's just a matter of what is the state you're in amongst the storm. And we have this sovereignty, this capacity to have this wonderful equanimity through the turbulence of life. And it's within us all, and this is one of my motivations, was to give people a taste and an experience. We call it Turiya in Sanskrit. Turiya is that transcendent experience of being that resides at all times and pervades all experience. It's just that most of our time, we're not aware of its existence. We're caught up in the physical, mental, and emotional and subjective relative world experience that we're having around us. And so we're missing one of the key components to existence predominantly. And that's what causes most suffering in the world. It's just the disconnect or the distraction from what's inherently within us at a deeper level. And for me, when I found meditation and this portal into this existence, I'm like, what? That was there the whole time? How did I not know that? How does the world not know that? And it felt like a almost not a responsibility, but a big vision and mission of mine to let people know that there is an experience within us that's so deep and so rich and so powerful and so beautiful that to not have that experience is to truly ignore the very essence of what life is all about.
Yeah, so beautiful and so important. And I guess, so one of the things I'm wondering, Tom, for listeners, which there are going to be listeners that are still new to meditation and to doing a mindfulness practice, what is an easy way for people to begin a practice? What is a way in?
There's so many ways I can answer this. The easiest response is, just go onto YouTube and find a meditation that's going to work for you. What can happen quite often when we do that is, and not to dismiss, there's some beautiful meditations on YouTube, and it's a great way to start if you can't afford to spend any money on anything. But what can often happen is if we choose a particular meditation style that we don't realize is one of the thousands of different styles of meditation, and we go, this must be what meditation is. this one didn't work for me, this one was too hard, or this one was too uncomfortable, this was too awkward, too clunky, whatever, then we can throw meditation out with the bathwater and say, meditation's not for me, it didn't work, it was too hard, therefore I'll just go about doing my normal days. And that would be very dismissive and unfortunate for that person, because that's not what meditation is. There's so many different ways we can meditate. The way I generally suggest it is, at the primary starting point would be to go all in. Don't dither and dather and try and, you know, take shortcuts. It's to learn with a teacher. The best and the most effective way to learn to meditate is to learn with a teacher in person, and do your own research. Find a technique that you resonate with. For me, I tried a number of different techniques until I found one that was much deeper, much more effective. So for me personally, the one that was the transcending style meditations, like TM or transcendental meditation, Vedic meditation, Deepak's primordial sound technique, those deeper style meditations were the ones that I resonated with and the one that was most effective for me. However, that's not going to be the case for everyone. We're going to find different people will resonate with different meditations. Like, there's the Vipassana style Buddhist meditations, then there's the Zen meditations, then there's the chakra clearing meditations. So firstly, do your own research as to find one that you're really resonating with. Find one that you feel, yeah, I could do this every day. This could really fit in with my day. Because if it's not going to be something that you can fit in, if they say, okay, we need you to do 3 hours of standing on your head, and repeating some crazy, you know, long Sanskrit sort of phrase, you're just not going to do it. So making sure that it's something that is applicable and accessible on a daily basis. And then shopping around, once you realize what technique you want to do, finding the teacher that you want to learn with, because, you know, within the practice that I teach, that's within a particular tradition of meditation or style of meditation, but there's various different styles of teachers that are within that style of meditation. So some people will resonate with other teachers more than they will resonate with me, or they'll resonate with me more than they resonate with other teachers. So there's a bit of research that needs to happen, I think, when we're going to choose the meditation. And then once we do, really give it the respect that it deserves. And I'd suggest do it every day for a minimum of at least 3 weeks, a minimum even for a month, and start to see the subtle benefits that you start getting out of it.
Well, and I appreciate that so much, because it's, you know, what I'm hearing is that one size doesn't fit all.
Absolutely.
And how important that is, that people, if one style doesn't fit, then try something else that really does resonate with you. So it can become just this assimilated part of your day, this part of your morning routine or your evening routine.
Yeah, taking time out is just so important to withdraw from the senses, withdraw from, when I say duality, I'm talking about me, Tom, and the world that I'm engaging in and the stimulation that I'm getting from that world, particularly with our phones, we're getting a lot of stimulation. So just to sit and close our eyes and whatever technique you find to withdraw from stimulation and noise and look to go into stillness and silence.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ticket. And when we're able to shut down the noise and be still within, what are some of the benefits? Why would someone want to do this?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, what's the motivating factor behind doing that? And people say to me, I want to learn to meditate. And I'll ask them, why do you want to learn to meditate? And they'll say, because I want to still my mind. I'll say, why do you want to still your mind? And they go, I don't know, isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Without really clearly knowing the incentive behind that action. And if we don't know the incentive behind the action, and if we can't quantify it and notice the tangible benefit of it, then we'll probably drop it quite quickly. So the first benefit that we get is on what I call the gross level. So gross as in the dense layer. So our physiology goes into a profoundly deep state of rest when we're in stillness and silence. And that creates this reorganization sort of process and optimization process in the system. We've got to really have a deep respect and appreciation for the intelligence within the body down to a cellular level and its natural capability within the body, within the parasympathetic nervous system, to reorganize and optimize itself. And this was, for me, just blew me away that I had anxiety, agoraphobia, panic attacks, depression, insomnia, constant viruses, colds and flus. And when I started meditating, the physiological rest that I was getting from that stillness experience was so profound that it bumped my body out of the sympathetic nervous system into the parasympathetic nervous system. And this reorganization, all those anomalies simply went away. It wasn't through medicine, wasn't through doctors, wasn't through psychiatrists or psychologists. And that's not to dismiss any of those, but the innate capability of my body to reorganize and optimize itself was just incredible. So that's the first one. And the second benefit is that when our mind goes beyond the coded thinking mind, so what we have in our brain are neurological patterns. That is, these are pathways of thoughts that our mind naturally gravitates through or along. And these are called vasanas in Sanskrit. So it's a tendency of the mind to think in a particular way. And so we've got these thought patterns that just happen day after day after day. And we have this very repetitious thought process. And when we transcend that in meditation, what happens is we free ourselves of that coded mindset and we start to access the consciousness itself. That's the awareness. And then from awareness, we start to have the capacity to observe the thinking mind and start to be more sovereign in the way our mind operates and start to go, hey, I don't know if those thoughts are serving me very well anymore. And I'm noticing that I have a lot of self-doubt. I'm noticing I have a lot of self-sabotage. I'm noticing I have a lot of unworthiness in my thinking process. And maybe it's time that I start to change and correct those vasanas and start to introduce new thought forms. And it's hard to do that from the thinking mind. It's easy to do it from consciousness itself, which we access through the meditation.
So, I mean, talk about the profound, that, I mean, just profound changes, just as I'm hearing your story. I mean, just the physiological layer is amazing. So it's changing, you know, your physicality, it's changing your emotional state, and then it's changing your thought patterns, you know? And so, so this is one of the beautiful things about this. Talk about something that's truly transformational in your life to go from the agoraphobia and the anxiety and the physical ailments to truly thriving in your life at this totally different level. And not even to mention, I think, and I don't even know, like, I'm not quite clear on what I should term this, but like the divine element of this, yeah, which is even being more in touch with that piece.
And that's what that brings to your life. How simple this is, you know, this is something that had been around for thousands of years and how simple this is. And that's what really inspired me to start the stillness project and to bring this into a mainstream way, because it's not like, you know, there's anything fancy about this. It's about a stripping away and the accessibility of it and the impact of it was just phenomenal. And, you know, Dr. Bruce Lipton from Stanford University Medical School says that 95% of all sickness is a result of stress. So if we've got this sick society, because we have a stress society, and if we can remove stress, then we remove sickness. And health is really the absence of sickness. Health is what we should be all the time, as much as possible. And so, yeah, it's quite phenomenal how easy it is. Not easy to get into that state, but how easy it is once we're in that state for it to start to do its magic.
Yeah. So thank you, Tom. We're going to be talking more about this when we get back from break. So join us as I continue my conversation with transformation coach Tom Cronin, filmmaker, author, the leader of the Stillness Project, and my dear friend and mentor and colleague. So thankful to have you here with us. Excited to get back and rejoin the conversation.
Imagine what it would be like to turn your pain into purpose. Tune in to Transformation with Martinet every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on transformationtalkradio.com. Martinet and her guests are here shining their lights today through empowering stories of hardship and transformation. Begin to see your life in a new light.
Visit martineemmons.com and tune in every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific to Transformation with Martine.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com. What did you say?
Tune in to the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Get empowered.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hi, my name is Diane McClay. I'm comfortable being in front of people. How to make things work in a structured format made me feel a little nervous. Everybody I have worked with on the Transformation Talk team met me with enthusiasm. Their confidence in me spilled over to me and allowed me to just grab onto it and say, oh yeah, that's me and I can own it. Thank you for showing up for me. Thank you for allowing me to put my gifts into the world, and thank you for making me look good while I do it.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James, and I'm here with filmmaker Tom Cronin, transformational life coach, and originator of the Stillness Project. We've been having just a really just meaningful conversation around meditation, stillness, the benefits of really adapting this into our lifestyle. And, you know, for this last segment, Tom, I don't want to miss part of what we talked about last week. We were having just a really interesting Zoom call and talking about something that you referred to as Plan B. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm just going to tweak it slightly. It says it's actually Game B.
Oh, Game B. Yeah, okay.
That's okay. So, yeah, it's an interesting dialogue that's starting to emerge. It's very early stages and it's still a little bit esoteric and it's starting to grow and emerge and seep into the daily language in our society, which is starting to recognize that we're currently in a Game A model, and the Game A model is a win-lose paradigm that is a finite game. And the Game B model that's just starting to emerge, it's not established in our world yet, but it's starting to emerge as people starting to design and cognize and start to contemplate what a Game B world looks like. And Game B is represented by a win-win model that has very different values, and it's an infinite game. So the point of playing in Game B is to not win the game, but to play the game. And it's a game that's built on creativity, expression, harmony, unification, oneness, love, but it also has economics and governance and finance and education and all the things that need to exist in a society. But what we have is a very hierarchical and oppressed and a very powerful, you know, when I'm talking powerful, I mean like a very few people at the top that are having control over very large people at the bottom. Now, it's not quite communism. That doesn't I'm not going to speak about that. It's just we don't even know what Game B is yet. This is the exciting thing. It's an emerging process that will continue to emerge because it's an evolving process. What we have in Game A is a very static process. We've had that static system for long periods of time. The education system hasn't really evolved. The finance system, the banking system, the agricultural system, the political system, the media system. The media system starting to emerge. We're seeing the media system starting to move into a Game B model, where before we had a very few handful of people controlling media. That's mm-hmm. newspapers, television, and radio. Again, they were controlled by very small people that then regulated and controlled what could be said and what information could be put out into the world. But now we're seeing this emergence of a new media system, which is part of the digital revolution, where you and I can discuss anything we want on a podcast, and we can share that with millions of people around the world. So now what's happened is the media system has been, I guess, eroded by the power of the elite, and now it's been given to the masses. So anyone can do it. It's still a little bit in control. We know that. So mm-hmm. there's still some control going on, some accounts getting shut down, and some things are being regulated. But as a whole, it's not a perfect model, but it's definitely a more unregulated model. And we're starting to see the emergence of unregulated economics, where we're seeing crypto starting to emerge. And I'm not saying that's a perfect model either. The thing is with Game B is that all the systems and all the models will be continually emerging and evolving. But it will be less controlled and less governed by a very small elite group of people. So it's a fascinating time. It's a time that needs to happen. There's going to be a lot of resistance in the emergence of the Game B world. It's like the analogy we used in the film and the book about the caterpillar and the morphing into the butterfly, and how the imaginal cells of the new version of that caterpillar start to emerge. And this is sort of the very early onset stages of the caterpillar morphing into the butterfly, the chrysalis moment. And the resistant immune system in the caterpillar seeing these imaginal cells as a threat and then starting to suppress and annihilate this new emergence. And so there will be some of that occurring. But what we'll see is this proliferation and this collaboration of these imaginal cells start to wanting to yearn and create and work together to create a new sustainable win-win model in the world under a Game B world.
Well, and it's much more complex, it sounds like, than just, you know, when you talk about Game B, it's not just this fanciful thought idea. You know, it's not just something that it's actually, it sounds like something that is already emerging, and yeah, that it really does, it's, you know, a complex multi-system that is bringing, you know, this new age of awareness, and I truly believe this new enlightened level of consciousness that's breaking through into expression.
Yeah, it's actually, there's a lot of amazing, I had dinner with a couple of people just two nights ago that were part of building economic blueprints in a Game B world. And so that if you think about just one simple factor of things in a Game B world, so our set of values in a Game A world are about valuing things that we can commoditize, like, you know, we can't commoditize the air, we can't commoditize ocean, and we can't even commoditize trees, but we can commoditize a 4x2. We can commoditize whale meat or fish. We can commoditize, I don't know, we can't commoditize air, but, you know, what we have to do is we have to start revaluing things differently. Like for instance, bees we can't commoditize, but we can commoditize honey. But then the bees play an integral role in our own sustainability. Okay. And so if we were to remove bees from the equation for some particular reason, because we're commoditizing something else, it could be the fertilizers that are affecting the bees or some other things. It could be 5G that's affecting the bees. We just don't know. But if we see that we don't take into consideration and value bees on their own without realizing the interwoven purpose of bees' existence, then we're not in a win-win paradigm anymore. We're in a win-lose paradigm. And that's what needs to happen in a win-win Game B world, is that we can't just assume that we keep doing everything that we're doing and Game B exists. It's a complete recoding and rewriting of the whole system. And one of the things that has to happen is a reassessing values. So for instance, reassessing stillness time, okay? Because if I only value my time based upon productivity, then I'm going to burn myself out, which is what's happening in the world. Then I'm not appreciating the value of not doing something and to sit in stillness and meditation. So it's a big shift that we need to go through. But what comes from Gambi doesn't create the shift. The shift happens in our consciousness. And then from that shift in consciousness, we start looking at designing new systems from that state of consciousness. And that's my motivation. You know, we did a screening at Davos at the World Economic Forum of the film. And I was invited to some big meetings with some amazing people that were looking to create big changes in the world. And one of the things that I was sharing with them is that the challenge they have is that they're trying to implement changes in a world where there's a static state of mind. And it's really my incentive and motivation is to, if I can shift people's minds, then they shift the things that they're building, designing and desiring. And the people that are designing these systems, one of them said the other night that they're building the systems, but they know that those systems aren't ready to be implemented into the world until the world's state of mind changes, because you can't implement a win-win paradigm into a world that's egocentric. And so it's the thing that needs to shift first and foremost is our state of mind.
And so
that's where the portal comes in.
I was just going to say that. I mean, that's exactly it, right? So that's where the portal comes in. And the importance for each one of us, you know, Tom, and I know you know this about me, you know, one of my biggest messages is that our own healing is essential. And so as we allow ourselves to heal, and I think part of that healing truly is through this portal and through meditation and allowing ourselves to get to silence. And what that does, I mean, and that's what our conversation has been about, is it changes us on a physiological level. It changes the way that we think. It changes, you know, truly how we feel inside. And so our healing matters, our contribution matters to creating this, you know, different mindset where then it is a win-win, where we are stepping out of ego and egocentrism and moving to a place where we really can connect with one another and be in this place where then this kind of, I keep wanting to call it plan B, game B is, you know, going to be able to be a reality.
Yeah, you know, your story is a classic story of that, exactly what we talk about in the film and in the book of you know, you've been through very difficult times. And when we're going through difficult times and when we're still affected by difficult times and when we're suffering in those difficult times, we are very much, it might sound a bit polluted, but egocentric because we're suffering in our own state. But when we heal, what happens is on the other side of healing is we heal and we free ourselves of that suffering and we start to want to share. We start to want to connect and we start to want to elevate. And that's, you know, all about what the spark is, you know, that light and that divinity, that shininess and that brightness starts to illuminate the world around us. And this really, if we start to multiply that and free, you know, free as many people as we can from not just their existing current life traumas, but the generations of trauma that they're carrying in their bodies. You know, what women have been through for so long, you know, and men as well, you know, just the lifetimes of trauma. This planet has a lot of healing to go through. The, you know, the generations of genocide and abuse and racism and prejudice and just, yeah, it's been a brutal time for human beings. And we've now's the time for us to all start healing and to be more present and to be more connected into our heart space. And from there, we'll start to design and create a very different world and communicate in a different way and create different relationships. And so I think, yeah, it's we're on the cusp of something really wonderful. And to start looking at that blueprint of what lies ahead for us, it could be really beautiful.
Well, and, you know, thank you for that, because I feel like that's what moves us out of feeling overwhelmed or that we don't have to be victims to these circumstances, that there really is a way out and a way through and a way beyond.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our essential nature to be peace and to be love and to be kindness and to be joy. To find through the portal, through whatever portal we're using to start resonating and connecting with that, and then expressing that outwardly from that space that we find within us.
Beautiful. You know, Tom, we're going to have to wrap up tonight. And I just, you know, I just have to say, I just want to acknowledge this on the air that, you know, Tom was my transformational life coach last year. And it was an absolutely phenomenal experience. And I just grew so deeply as a result of our work together. So I'm just forever grateful for that. And
it's amazing to work with you, you know, to have someone so, you know, open and adaptable and, you know, to really see the potential and to walk into that space so fearlessly, you know, it was a joy to work with you.
Thank you. And I'm thankful for our ongoing friendship, and I'm thankful for this amazing film coming out and your continued work in the world. Tom, how can they, number one, watch the film, and how can they connect with you?
So firstly, to watch the film, they just simply go to enterportal.com on the website, and they can just rent or purchase the film there. And then they can find me at tomcronin.com or Tom Cronin Instagram. They're my two main areas.
Awesome. Thank you, Tom, so much. It's always such a joy to be with you. Thank you for sharing this important message and for being on The Spark with me.
It was great to be here. Thanks for such a wonderful discussion, as always.
Thanks for tuning in to The Spark with Stephanie James. Remember that you already have what you need to live a life that is fully lit and fully alive. You're already holding the flame. Now it's time to ignite your best life. Learn more at stephaniejames.world. That's stephaniejames.world. And tune in next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, only on transformationtalkradio.com. Shine on!
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.